Okay, Boker Tov. This week we're not going to deal with one of the giants, but deal with a Pesach issue. We're right around the corner, in case you haven't figured it out. Mirz Hashem, our next year is going to be a week after Pesach. The day after Yom Tov, Sunday, April 4th, Isru Chag, there won't be Shiurim at the center, at least formal Shiurim. And the week afterwards, on April 11th, we are going to be at the Israel Center. Now, I understand that the Shiurim will also be broadcast by Zoom, but the center will be opened. And you'll follow the instructions for those who are interested in coming to a live in-person Shiur. So for all practical purposes, this is going to be the last Shiur for this wave of COVID that we're broadcasting from home. In Yirtzeh Hashem, it will be the last broadcast from home. So we won't have to do this. But I do want to thank David from the OVU Center and the entire staff who've been so so good and so meticulous about, you know, putting this all together so that we were able to spread Torah in the various, in all these months of a year already since the beginning of COVID, and the Yashar Koach Gadol to the center and to the organizers, the administrators, and so on. My father, Olav Shalom, used to respond to the question, how are you? So the typical Israeli answer as a polite response was, Hakol Beseder, Hakol Beseder. Now, we know in Israel that Hakol Beseder is just a nice way of saying maybe things aren't so Beseder. If you bring the car into the garage, and he tells you Hakol Beseder, you know you're in big trouble. Hakol Beseder doesn't always mean that that everything is okay. Although that's what we say. It's a popular phrase here. But my father used to say, and I don't believe he invented this, he heard it from somebody but liked it. He used to say, Hakol Beseder chutz mima shelo beseder. I mean, everything's okay except for those things that are not okay. And I used to respond to that, there should be more things Beseder than not Beseder, and then we'll be in good shape. But as a headline for discussing the Seder night, this happens to be a very, very appropriate title. Hakol Beseder, Chutz Mima Shelo Beseder. The word Seder that we use for Seder night was not invented by our grandmothers, but it's a word that is halachically binding. It was always known as the Seder. And the reason is that things have to be done according to order, according to Seder. Now, if you come from Yekki stock, the word Ordnung in German, which means order, is not new. Everything has to be done in order. So what's the big chidush? What's the novelty that the Seder has to be done in accordance with a Seder? The answer is that there are things where order is a very good idea, except if done out of order, it still stands, it still has validity. And you don't have to repeat things if done out of order. But there are a few very, very limited number of topics in halakha where the order is absolutely critical. And if you do it out of order, out of sync, it's as if you didn't do it at all and you have to repeat the entire performance. So I'm gonna give you a few examples, but just to show you that the order of the Seder is actually very, very critical. There have been poems that have been authored and written so that man, woman, and child will know the exact Seder. I believe all of us online grew up on a kindergarten song, but it's not a kindergarten song at all. Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, Rachatz, Magid, Rachatz, Motzi Matzah, Maror, Korech, Shulchan Orech, Tzafun Barech, Halel Nirza. There is rhyme scheme here. There is tempo. It's a real poem in every sense of the word. And the author of the poem, who we don't really have a clue who authored this particular poem, if I'm not mistaken, because I'm looking at Rav Menachem Kasher Zatzal, who was the author, the famous author of the Torah Shlema, an encyclopedic work on Midrashim on every single pasuk of the Chumash. He had his pet project in 1960. He put out a sefer called Haggadah Shleima, and he has a lengthy introduction. And one of his chapters, chapter 16, is on the simanim of the Seder. So one of the simanim is this song, Kadesh Urchatz Karpas Yachatz, and so on. And it's found in many sidurim of old. It's found in Yemenite machzorim. It's found in Sephardi machzorim. It's found in old Roman customs, which means it's a very, very old poem. If it's found in Rome, it's an old, old poem, and made it into Ashkenaz eventually, and almost became adopted as the authentic poem for the Seder. And again, you hear the rhyme scheme: Kadesh Urchatz Karpas Yachatz Magid Rachatz Motzi Matzah Moror Korech Shulchan Orech Tzafun Barech Halel Nirza. You have the poem there, and you have everything in order. And therefore, if you have this song in mind, you don't need a mangina, you don't need a niggun, a melody for this. At least you have the poem. You're going to do this, you're going to perform the Seder in order. But I'm not at fault that Rav Kasher brings no fewer than 14 variations of the poem for the Seder night. So obviously, they're all very, very, very different. And fundamentally, the order might be the same, fundamentally, but the words are different, the poetic scheme is different. Some are a little bit more elaborate. It's not just a one-word line. Like one of the poems says, Ala gefen kiddush bizmana, b'motzei shabbat yaknehaz simana, that we have this year, motzei shabbat. So there's a whole idea of how you do the kiddush, and how you do the Abdallah, and where do you say the shekhiyanu. And that there's an abbreviation found in the Masechet Pesachim that all the Daf Yomi people just read it, learned it just a few days ago, yaknehaz. And this particular poet introduced details of the Seder beyond just saying Kaddish, which is Kiddush, as we know. But what's most important is that not all of them actually have the same Seder. There are certain things, certain details, that are a little bit out of sync with the Kaddish Urchatz Karpas Yachatz that we know, that we are familiar with. And specifically with the question of yachatz. So we do Kadesh Urchatz, right? We do Kiddush, we wash our hands, and that's a whole question. Ashkenazim do not make a bracha on that Urchatz. And the reason is because while we're going to eat a vegetable dipped in salt water, which mandates a Netilat Yadayim, where most of the year, we're not even careful about this, by the way. Most of us take an apple and wash it and don't particularly dry off the apple completely or do netilat yadayim. But on Seder night, we want to do things that are to remember the days of Beit HaMikdash and the upgraded status of Tumah V'Tahara, impurity and purity laws, that we've introduced this netilat yadayim. And according to the Rambam, it is actually with a bracha al netilat yadayim. And the reason is because the Rambam says you have to eat a full-blown kezayit of karpas. Now, we grew up by learning and studying that the karpas that we eat, whether you're using, you know, the greens or what we used to call in Yiddish petrushka, we call the white carrot that's also the root of parsley, we know that, or using potato, whatever you're using for karpas, the Ashkenazi custom is to eat less than a kezayit, less than the full measure. But the Rambam has that you eat a full measure, and that was the opinion of the Vilna Gaon. And in that case, then there would be a bracha al netilat yadayim for the Urchatz. But in our Seder, most of our Sedarim, Urchatz is without a bracha. And then there's Karpas, and then there's Yachatz. So you take the three matzot, and you break the middle matzah, and the larger piece is put away in a whatever, it's put away for the Afikoman, and it's put away for the grandchildren to have a good time finding it and hiding it and then bringing it out and negotiating a nice gift. And that gift, by the way, the price tag on that gift has gone up in the past 20 years. Once upon a time, it was just a symbolic gift. But now the kids have become great negotiators and, they hold out for, yeah. My father, Alva Shalom, used to tell us that he received a loch von a bagel, the hole from the bagel. You know, that was the gift. of the Afikoman. So my family, that's now a tradition. You get a loch from the bagel. So you have Yachatz, and then Magid, the beginning of the Haggadah, Halach Ma'anya, and the Manishtana, and so on, so on, so on, until the drinking of the second cup, and then there's Rachatz, the washing of the hands for the Moitzi Matzah, and so on. So where is the Yachatz? The Yachatz is before we say Halach Ma'anya. That's the way we do it. There's only one catch. Not everybody had that. And if I read one of the simanim, which is number 5 in the listing of the 14 that Rav Kasha brings, it reads as follows: Kadesh, vehit kadesh. One sanctifies and becomes sanctified by making the kiddush. Tibul is the dipping. The idea is, well, vehit kadesh actually is a reference to washing of the hands. That's what it means. Kadesh, there's kiddush. Vehit kadesh, you sanctify yourself, in this case, cleansing spiritually by the tefillat yadayim, what we call urchatz. Tibul, the dipping, is what we call karpas. And then it says ufros, right? It says fros, that means you cut. And then doreshet, and then you explain. And then comes rachatz, then comes the motzi matzah. That's really the order that we have. But there's another version where the yachatz is conspicuously absent after kadesh, because you make kiddush on a cup, and then because rishon, and then yerek, gancha, the vegetables of the garden, tibel, you have to dip, and then haggadah, because sheni amur, and then the haggadah is said over the second cup. What happened to the yachatz? So the truth is that we will see in a few minutes that according to Rambam, there is no yachatz where we do yachatz. Yachatz is done after the drinking of the second cup. And before the Moitzi Matzah, that's when yachatz takes place. So I'm anticipating now. So I'm going to put this on the back burner for a few minutes and take a peek at the importance of Seder. The importance of Seder. And then we'll get back to the discussion of yachatz to show that there is a Seder, but not everybody has the same Seder. But you have to do it according to the Seder. So in source number 2, there's a Sefer called Machzor Vitri. Machzor Vitri, Vitri is a city in France, and it's written by students of Rashi. So we have a pretty good idea. It's the end of the 11th century, and it reads there, Ose sidro ketikunan rabotenu. You perform the Seder according to the order that our Chachamim ordained. Ule olam lo yishane misidro. Not only do you do it according to the order, but you should never divert from the order. The order is extremely, extremely critical. And it says, Yigros ze bamasoret. You should learn, study this tradition, mitam Rabbi Yossi HaGadol. Who is Rabbi Yossi HaGadol? Most probably the famous poet, Rabbi Yosef Tov Elim, who lived in the beginning of the 11th century. He was born actually in 980, but the beginning of the 11th century. And he's an Ashkenazi, clearly French, early French poet. And we're going to see the most famous poem that made it into the Haggadah, Chasal Sidur Pesach Kilchato, the very end of the Haggadah, before we get to the poems and songs that conclude the Haggadah with Chag Gadya, Chasal Sidur Pesach. So this is Rabbi Yossi HaGadol, that's how he was known as, and his name was Rabbi Yosef Tov Elem, and he had the following. Gefen Kiddush Zman. Gefen Kiddush Zman means Bor Pri Hagafen, Mekadesh Yisrael Vazmanim, the bracha of the Kiddush for the day. Zman is Shechianu. Netilat Yirak, Netila is the Netilat Yadayim. Yirakot, there's the Yirakot Adama, not to take Maror now, but it's Adama. You take some of the vegetable for purposes of Karpas, Vitaval, and you dip it. Batza or Butzea, and now you split. This is the splitting of the matzah. And then Anya, the Halachma Anya, the poor bread. Kasa, now you pour the second course. Vinishtana, and now is the question of the Manishtana. And when that's all finished, Netilat, the second washing of the hands, Shlema Motzi, on the full matzah, the complete matzah, Yemeka Motzi, Upfros, and on the broken matzah, Achilat Ima. With it, you make the bracha on the broken matzah. And then, of course, you eat it. And then the chasa, which is the moror. Chasa moror. Taval. Then you dip it in charoises. Korech, you have the sandwich. Soed, you have the meal. Bitsua, maftir. You eat that which we broke. In yachatz, this is the afikoimen. And then notel, shlishi. There's a washing before benching here, he says. And lemazon. And then Rivi'i lahalel. Shlishi is the third cup, the mazon. And then there's the Rivi'i lahalel, the fourth cup for halel. So what you see in this poem of Rabbi Yosef Tov Elam, it's not our poem, but it's a different poem. It's another variation of the poem, which has the yachatz in the place that we have it, botzea. But what's important in this source is the idea, lo yishane mi sidro. You have an order, and do not divert, do not move away from this particular order. And now we'll take a look at source number three. Source number three, basically, this is Rabbi Yosef Karo in the Beit Yosef on the tour, and he quotes a sefer called Kolbo. Kolbo is written, it's a digest of halachot that were written by Rabbi Aaron HaKohen from Lunil, 13th century, Provence, which is South France. This is a chacham who actually moves around a little bit, and in various stations in life, he's not in Provence, but he's known as Rabbi Aaron HaKohen from Lunil, and he writes a sefer called Orchot Chayim, many volumes, which he himself makes a digest, and he calls it the Kolbo. So the Beit Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo, is quoting from this book, the Kolbo, and he says, Haminag, the custom is, L'chalka, Kodem Chikra Haggadah. The custom is to break the matzah before you read the Haggadah. Kedei Shiyomar Aleha Halach Ma'anya. Because we're going to begin Halach Ma'anya. And one of the reasons why it's called Lechem Oni, poor man's bread, because poor people never can afford a full loaf. So they're always eating prusot, slices of bread, parts of bread. Ma le'ani beprusa, afkan beprusa. So the Gemara says that we want that the matzah should be broken and symbolize the type of bread that a poor person would eat. Not only is it baked as lechem oni, but it's also broken so that we should remember that there is this poverty-stricken level that we want to incorporate into the matzah itself. Right before we say halach ma'anya, here is the poor man's bread. V'yeshomim, and some say, shehu kedei shiyiru atinokot v'yishalu. No, the reason why we break the matzah at this point, when we have regular bread or challah, and we cut the challah, the word botzea is used in halakha, we eat it. That's the first thing you do after you make a moitzi, and you eat it. And here, what is the kids are going to see? They're breaking the matzah, and they're going to start salivating. It's going to be Pavlov's dog hair. You know, you see, you break the matzah, you start eating. But nobody's eating. So you put the big piece in a afikoimen bag, you put the small piece back with the other matzahs, and something's wrong here. And that stimulates the children to ask, which is the classic reason why we have karpas, to get the children to ask questions. What exactly is going on here? And that's the question, ma nishtana alayla zeh? Minei ma anu matminim hamatzah? Why are we hiding the matzah? V'adayin lo achalnu, we didn't even eat yet. So this is a legitimate question. V'yesh omrim, and some say, you know, if we don't break off the matzah afikoman and just leave it on the table, what might happen inadvertently, that during the meal, somebody's going to nibble on it, and then when it comes to the matzah afikoman, it's going to be gone. It's going to be devoured already. And therefore, the custom is to put it away. There's no discussion here that the children should hide it or anything like that, but rather, it should be put away for safekeeping until we need it for the eating of the afikoman. Because the problem is that you might have eaten the last shmura matzah that you may have had, and then you won't have shmura matzah for the afikoman. V'lo yelo od matzah mishumeret v'achrona. V'lafikach, therefore, matznien otah, we hide it, says the Beit Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo. Okay, So we have here the minag documented, what we do, and that is to do the yachatz before the halach ma'anya. If we just take a peek at the source number four, actually comes in segments because it's a long source from the Rambam's eighth chapter of Hilchot Chametz Matzah. But if I'm looking at the second page on top, which is Halacha Vav, the Rambam is already finished with the Magid, and he gets to the Netilat Yadayim before we're going to eat the matzah. And he says, V'karkach, and afterwards, Mevarech al Netilat Yadayim, V'notel Yadav Shein Shnia, you wash your hands a second time, Share Heisiach Da'ato B'Sha'at Kriyat Agada. Question is, I washed already, you know, an hour and a half ago, when I did the Karpas, so why do I have to wash again? The answer is because your mind wandered, and you didn't have in mind at that point that you want that the first Netilat Yadayim should be adequate for the later point. So we wash again. Fine. Velokeach Shnei Rikikin. The Rambam here does not begin with three matzahs as our custom is, but he only has two matzahs, and there was no yachatz yet. So you take the two matzot, cholek echad mehen, you break one of them, umeniach pros letoch shalem. You take the smaller piece, the broken part, holding it next to the unbroken one, umavarech hamotzi lechem min haaretz, you make the bracha hamotzi, umepnei ma eino mevarech al shtei tkikarot kishar yamim tovim. What about lechem mishnah? I mean, Shabbos and Yom Tov, there's a whole idea of lechem mishnah. So what we do, we're brilliant. We begin with three matzah, so that after you've broken the middle matzah and you put one away, the larger half, larger part for the afikoman and the small part you put back for the bracha of alachilat matzah, you still have two whole matzahs for lechem mishnah. But the Rambam comes and suggests a novelty that the whole mitzvah of lechem oni neutralizes the obligation of lechem mishnah for Seder night. There's no need for lechem mishnah. And therefore, you're making the bracha, motzi lechem min haaretz, on a matzah and a half. It's actually less than a half. Let's say in a matzah and a third, because the two-thirds went for the afikoman. That's what he says here. He says that the reason that we don't need to make a bracha on two kikro, two solid pieces of matzah, like two breads, kishar yamim tovim, like other yamim tovim, mishum shenemar, because it says lechem oni. Ma darko shel ani beprusa afkan beprusa, that here is a special halacha that you make the bracha on something that's a broken piece of matzah. And therefore, there's no need for lechem mishnah on Seder night. This is the Rambam. This is not our custom. Again, our custom is to begin with three matzot, so that after we broke the middle matzah, we still have two full matzot, complete matzot, unbroken, to have lechem mishnah. But the Rambam believed that you began with two matzot and not three. You did not do yachatz before the manishtana, before halach ma'anya. You waited until washing of the hands. And right before the moitzi lechem min haaretz, you break the matzah and you make the brachot on the matzah and a third. And the matzah and a third. This is the Rambam's point of view. So what you see from here is Rambam has yachatz later on in the Haggadah. And hence, it's a deviation from our Seder. So let's get back now to the concept of Seder. So the Rambam in source number four, the first page, the middle of source number four, he begins with Sidur Asiyat Mitzvot Elu, the order of performance of these mitzvot, Beleil Chamisha Asar, the night of the 15th of Nisan, Kachu, here it is. And he gives us the entire order. But what's very strange is the Rambam, who's living in the 12th century in Egypt, knows very well that at his Seder, there is no Korban Pesach. At his Seder, there's no Korban Chagigah of Erev Pesach that was brought so that you should have meat at your main meal of the Seder night, so that when you get to the eating of the Korban Pesach, you're actually filled up already, you've been satiated. There, we don't have that because we don't have Beit HaMikdash. The Rambam knew all that when he was writing. The Rambam was not hallucinating when he was presenting to Am Yisrael Seder night as if Beit HaMikdash was functioning, it was up and running, and everything was completely in place. And we're going to see that the Rambam, what he does is something very, very interesting in a literary manner. he uses parenthetical inserts without putting the parentheses, the phrase ubazman hazeh, and today we do such and such. So let's just take a look. We'll see that there are at least six such occasions where Rambam is going to give us what was prevalent in the days of Beit HaMikdash and what we do today. So let's do this. It says, Batchila, at the beginning, Mosgin kost lekol echad beechad, you pour out wine for everybody, umavarech bor pi agafen, v'omer alav kiddush hayom, uzman, you say kiddush and shachayanu, and you drink. Right, this everybody does. Everybody has a cup of wine, everybody's, you don't have to make the kiddush, you can listen to kiddush to somebody, say amen, and so on. Chakach, afterwards, v'varech al netilat yadayim, this is what I mentioned already, the Rambam says that the urchatz is with the bracha, notel yadav, you wash your hands, umevi'im shulchan aruch, you bring the table. Now this is comparable to what we call the kara, the seder plate. Here the Rambam is talking about people who might be reclining on a couch, on a type of sapa, they're doing haseva, so there's going to be like a nice coffee table that's going to be brought. And on that table, translate that in modern idiom, the seder plate on our table, what do you have on the seder plate? He says, well, you have va'alav, and on it, maror, v'yerek acher, the maror, and another vegetable, because you're going to need that for karpas. Matzah, fine. Charoset, Rambam doesn't have salt water, didn't exist in the Sephardi tradition. V'gufo shel keves ha-pesach, and the meat of the lamb chops, the roasted lamb chops. And basar chagigah shel yom ha-arba'asar, which, by the way, this year, because Erev Pesach is on Shabbat, if we have Beit HaMikdash and Mirz Hashem this coming Shabbat, we're not going to bring it. The Chagigat Arba Asar. So we're going to have to fill ourselves up with a lot of potatoes before we eat the Korban Pesach. Because Korban Pesach has to be eaten al hasova, while satiated. And that's why there was this Korban, this sacrifice called the Chagigat Arba Asar, the Korban Chagigah for Erev Pesach, so you can fill yourself up. But this year, Erev Pesach is on Shabbat. This is not brought. Ubazman hazeh. Now the Rambam says, what about today? Today we don't have the Korban Pesach and the Chagiga. Mevi'im al ha-shulchan, in its place, we put on the table or on the seder plate, shnei minei basar, two types of meat. So again, the Rambam doesn't have what Ashkenazim have, the zroa, the shank bone, and a hard-boiled egg. That's our custom. But the Rambam has two types of meat. The Mishnah says, Shnei tafshilin, two cooked dishes. Echad zecher lepesach, v'echad zecher lechagigah. We should remember that there was a Korban Pesach and there was a Korban Chagigah. So we put markers on the Seder plate to remember this. So here's the first usage of Bezman Hazeh. Then in Halakha Gimel, I didn't want to use up the whole page, the Rambam in Halakha Bet gives us the Manishtana. And in the Manishtana, the Rambam gives us not four, but five questions that are asked at the Manishtana. The four that we all know from kindergarten. And the fifth, Shebechol alelot anu ochlim basar tzli shaluk umavushal. Throughout the year, we eat meat that's roasted, cooked, potted, you know, rotisseried, microwaved, whatever you do with your meat. Halayla zeh tzli. Tonight, it has to be roasted. There's a question whether we said halayla zeh kulot tzli, whether the other korban, the chagigat abasa, also had to be roasted or not. Some of you may have a custom that after you make the hard-boiled egg, you put it over the fire a little bit. I mean, I don't know if we can see you, but some of you are nodding. I see some are nodding affirmatively. And that's because of the view that the chagiga also had to be tzli'esh, to remember that point. And according to that view, the nusach, the version in the Mishnah was halayla zeh kulotzli, everything had to be roasted. But Tosfot points out in Masechet Pesachim that many said views are that the chagiga could be cooked and not boiled, and hence the question that the children would be asking was halayla zeh tzli. Tonight I see that there's roasted, but not that everything is roasted. So the Rambam just tells us that there are two pieces of meat on the table. One is to remember the Korban Pesach, and one is the Korban Chagiga. And when he gives the manashtana, and he asks that fifth question, so in Halacha Gimel, he then says, Bezman hazeh, but today, eino mer halayla zeh kulotzli. Why? She'ein lanu korban. We don't have the korban. Then he continues in the same breath with Matchil Bignut, there's a formula for how we give over the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim by beginning with things that blemish the dignity of Am Yisrael. And the Gemara talks about what are the blemishes. And the one is the theological blemishes, that we were pagan worshippers. And you can take it back to Avraham Avinu's father, Terach, but you can also talk about the Am Yisrael in Mitzrayim, who are 49 rungs of Tumah, which also refers to pagan worship. And that was Kadosh Baruch Hu had to get us out of that type of mode of theological thinking. And then there was the political, there was Avadim Ayinu, we were slaves. We had to get out of that too. So this was a gnai. It didn't bring a lot of much dignity and kavod and honor to Am Yisrael. And the Rambam says it in one breath when he says, "Halayla zeh kulot tzli she'ein lanu korban." In a moment, we'll get back to this as well, this point. But then the Rambam goes on and he tells us about the Haggadah. And you remember towards the end of Magid, we have that Mishnah of Rabbi Gamliel Yaomer, whoever didn't say the three, explain the three mitzvot, didn't fulfill his obligation. And which are they? Pesach, Matzah, and Moro. Now in our Haggadah it reads, Pesach shayu avotenu ochlim bizman shebeit hamikdash kayam. The korban Pesach that once upon a time was eaten when there was Beit HaMikdash, why was it eaten? But then we say matzah zu, we eat the matzah for this reason, moro zeh for this reason. But the original Haggadah, says the Rambam, was Pesach zeh she'anu ochlim. Why are we eating in the present tense? Why are we eating the korban Pesach? Why are we eating the matzah? Why are we eating the moro? And it's interesting that in this particular discussion, the Rambam says the order is Pesach, Maror, and Matzah, not the way we have it. Why is that so? Because the Maror is not an independent mitzvah. Maror is linked to the eating of Korban Pesach. Al Matzot Umrorim Yochluhu. That's the only place that you have an indication in the Chumash that you have to eat Maror. Matzah is in that same Pasuk, except that Matzah has a different Pasuk. But Erev Tochlu Matzot. On the evening of the night of the Seder, you have to eat matzah. So there is a discussion. There's actually a dispute in the Gemara. There's one opinion that says that when there's no Korban Pesach, because there's no Beit HaMikdash, so on a biblical level, the Oraita, there's no matzah and no maror, and everything is rabbinic today. But there's another opinion which became the halakha, and that is maror we don't have today biblically because there's no Korban Pesach. But matzah is maintained because of an independent pasuk. So in the days of Beit HaMikdash, the order was Pesach, Maror, and Matzah. Because Maror was linked to the Korban Pesach, and Matzah stood independently. After the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the order was changed to Pesach, and that we're just going to remember. And then Matzah, which is the Oraita, so it has a higher standing than Maror. And Maror is on the bottom of the rung, the ladder, because it's now only a rabbinic mitzvah to remember that there was such a thing called Maror. So the order today is Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. So the Rambam gives us the Haggadah as if Beit HaMikdash was stood. Pesach she'anu achlim ashuma. Why are we eating the Korban Pesach? But at the end of Halacha Dalet, he says, u'bezman hazeh, but today we have updated the Nusach, the version. We say, Pesach shayu avoteinu achlim bezman Beit HaMikdash kayam. Why did they eat the Korban Pesach? So here you have another example where the Rambam gives us the Beit HaMikdash mode and then updates it with the words Ubezman HaZeh. So too, in the Bracha of Gaal Yisrael. So in the Bracha of Gaal Yisrael, which concludes the section of Magid, in Halacha Chehei, the Rambam says, in the middle of this text, says, you say, Baruch Ata Hashem Lekein Macholam, Asher Galanu Vegalat Avoteinu, Mimitzrayim, Higiyanu Lalayla Hazeh, Lechol Bo Matzah Umrorim. Zeh, finished. But Bezman Hazeh, we add, and I'm sure you're familiar with this addition, we add, Kein Hashem Lekeinu Lekein Avoteinu, Yagi'enu Limoadim, Ligalim Achayim, Kadosh Baruch Hu should give us the schud of having the complete Beit HaMikdash activity, and we'll be able to v'nochal sham min hazvachim min hapsachim, we'll be able to eat from the zevach and from the pesach. It's a tefillah. It's basically a tefillah that happens at the end of this particular bracha. And that's an add-on of Bezman Hazeh. There was a Rav from Holland. He unfortunately was taken to Bergen-Belsen, and in the Pesach of 1944, it was pretty much before the end of the war, almost before the end of the war, Pesach 44, in Bergen-Belsen, obviously there was no matzah to be gotten, and there was little morsels of bread that they would give to the people there, and it was Pesach, and he realized that he had to eat it for pikuach nefesh. He needed every morsel of calories that he can get. And what he did was he composed a type of bracha that he said that he's asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Asher kitshanu b'mitzvotav b'tzivanu, God commanded us l'vachai b'hem, that we shall live and not die. So here he is, he's going to eat chametz on Pesach, and he's telling HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm doing a mitzvah. I'm doing a mitzvah because I have to live. But then he concludes with Kain Yagienu, Shashem Lokenu Yagienu, Kadosh Baruch Hu should give us the great zchut of arriving at. He's only worried about matzah and maror. He doesn't have Korban Pesach on his agenda. Let's just get out of here so that we can have a seder with matzah and maror. And then Korban Pesach, I'll worry about some other time at some later date. Unfortunately, he succumbed days after Pesach. Days after Pesach. But they use this particular bracha as a model of what he wanted to say at that time. I believe it was a heroic moment in what we call the gvura, the religious spiritual gvura of a Jew in the days of the Shoah. So you have here Bezman Hazeh. And again, in the continuation, the Rambam uses it with regard to the eating of the Korban Pesach. He'll say again, in Alachatetu Bezman Hazeh. So this usage of Bezman Hazeh is there all the time. So the question, the fundamental question is, my gosh, the Rambam is writing this, he's writing this Sefer, Mishneh Torah, in 12th century Egypt, for all of Am Yisrael. He knows very well there's no Beit HaMikdash. Now he writes in the Mishneh Torah about Beit HaMikdash also. It's like the only halachic Sefer that deals with everything you wanted to know about Beit HaMikdash, but you're afraid to ask. Two of the 14 books of the Mishneh Torah are Beit HaMikdash, Sefer Avodah and Sefer Korbanot. And in various stations in the Mishneh Torah, Rambam doesn't shy away from talking about Beit HaMikdash. For example, Birkat Kohanim, we call in Yiddish Duchening, Birkat Kohanim. So Rambam gives us the Birkat Kohanim as you have it in Shul, in Beit HaKnesset. But then, as almost an afterthought, he gives us the unique way of Birkat Kohanim and Beit HaMikdash. So he doesn't start by telling us, this is Birkat Kohanim and Beit HaMikdash. But by the way, but the Knesset, today we do it otherwise. No, he starts with the way we do it in Beit Knesset, the way we're familiar with. And because he's so all-encompassing, he gives us also the way Birkat Kohanim took place in the Beit HaMikdash. Yet when it comes to Seder night, he does it the other way around. He gives us, he presents the Seder as if Beit HaMikdash exists and is up and running, and just as they say, agavucha, well, just by the way, there is no Beit HaMikdash, Bezman Hazeh, so this will do differently, and this will leave out, and this will change, and so on. And it doesn't give us a presentation of the Seder as if it exists today. He opts for giving us the Seder as the days of Beit HaMikdash, and simply qualifying how to deal with it today without Beit HaMikdash. Why does he do that? So, I mentioned at the outset that Seder is very, very important. There are some halachot where Seder is what's called the chatchila. You should do it in a particular order, but if you don't do it in that order, you do not have to repeat what you did. I'll give you a good example. Shabbat and Rosh Chodesh and Yom Tov, you have Shachris, you have Musaf. Now, if you daven Musaf before Shachris, it's okay. You shouldn't do it like that. There's a concept called Tadir v'sheino Tadir, Tadir Kodem, that which is more usual has first priority. And that was done in Beit HaMikdash as well. The morning sacrifice, Korban Tamid Shel Shachar, was brought. And the Musaf for Shabbat or Rosh Chodesh brought afterwards. But if they did it the other way around, it's still okay. So there are certain scenarios where you should do it according to a certain order because of particular halachot. But if you don't do it in that order, it does not detract from the fulfillment of the mitzvah. There's even a mitzvah in the Torah that says, you know, you should do it in order. You know, when you have a farm and you have, you're growing produce, if you're into agriculture, and you know that you have to give the truma to the kohen, and you have to give the maisa rishon to the levi, and you have to give the maisa sheni afterwards in this first and second and fourth and fifth year of the Shemitah cycle, bring it up to Yerushalayim, and in the third and sixth year, instead of that, you bring it to give it to poor people, maser ani. So there's a sequence here of how you take your grain, which is tevel, untithed, and make it into readily available to be eaten. So you have to take care of trumot umasrot. Hufashu trumot umasrot. I remember seeing once on a can of a soft drink. It was and it had ashgacha on it. Ashgacha, and it said, you know, kasher the mahadrin. Hufashu trumot umasrot. Trumot umasrot were taken off. It's all very nice. What was it? It was a soft drink. With some flavored soft drink, whatever it was, orange, grape, apple, whatever. And the ingredients, it said specifically, water, sugar, food coloring, it said, and it said on the can, a no machil pri, it does not contain any fruit. So, you know, you can have an artificial grape juice, an artificial apple juice. You can create the taste artificially with no fruit content, etc. So what exactly was Hufreshu Trumot Masrot? What did they take it off from? From the aluminum of the can? From the water? From the sugar? Obviously, I know it can happen. These are standard Hechsherim that just get printed onto the cans. But, you know, a little respect for the integrity of the consumer. How can you write that? Hufreshu Trumot Masrot? On something that you don't need Trumot HaMasro. But all right, let's get back seriously to Trumot HaMasro. So I just gave you the order. Truma, Gedola to the Kohen, Maser Rishon to the Levi, Maser Sheni or Maser Ani, depending what year of the Shemitah cycle, is a particular order. And in source number 8 from the Sefer Chinuch, there's a mitzvah in the Torah. Shelo lahagdim chukei hatfuot. Before the Torah even tells us that you have to take off truma, that comes later in the Chumash, much later in the Chumash that you have to take off truma. And before the Torah tells you have to take off Meiser, which is also later, these are Bamidbar and Devarim concerns. Already in Parshat Mishpatim and Shmot, the Torah says, Meleatcha v'demacha lo ta'acher. Don't delay the proper givings, and we don't even know what the givings are. And the givings are that shalom nagdim chukei atfuah k'tzatzam al k'tzatzam. It's explained halachically that give the kohen first, give the levi second, and then take care of the maser sheni for yourself. That's the mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to do it according to order. But as the Rambam and others say, but if you did it out of order, if you gave the levi maser rishon first, and then only afterwards you gave the kohen truma gedolah, you don't have to do it again. It's okay. So you see here that the mitzvah in the Torah to do it in accordance to a certain pattern, a certain order, is only l'chatchila. The Torah wanted you should do it in an order. But if you do it out of order, it's also going to stay. But I'm going to cite two other mitzvot where if you do it out of order, it's as if you did nothing. One is davening Shmon Esrei. In source number 5, the Gemara says in Masechet Megillah, the Tanya, it says in the Braita, Shimon HaPakuli Hizdir Shmon Esrei Brachot Lefnei Rav Gamliel Ala Seder B'Yavne, that these brachot were organized in front of Rav Gamliel in the Beit Din, the Sanhedrin of Yavne. The Gemara tells us, actually, it was already the Anshe Knesset HaGdolah, 120 Zkenim, who, so you know that the 120 members of the Knesset in Israel corresponding to the 120 Anshe Knesset HaGdolah. That's why it's even called the Knesset. So we have the Anshe Knesset HaGdolah, and we have the Anshe Knesset HaKtana. So the Anshe Knesset HaGdolah, they're up for election in 2 days. You'll have to deal with that. But Anshe Knesset HaGdolah, 120 of the Chachamim, they established Shmon Esrei Brachot Al HaSeder, in order. And there in Masechet Megillah Yudzayin Amud Bet Yudchet Amud Aleph, the Gemara spends a whole page explaining this connections between bracha 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, 4 to 5, and 17 to 18. Every single bracha has to be in order. There are connecting patterns and understandings. You can't start Shmon Esrei and then jump to the sixth bracha and then say the eighth bracha and then go back to the fourth bracha. It's not going to work. If you do that, you have to daven over. It's as if you didn't daven at all. You said every single bracha, great kavana. Not, it's worth nothing. It must be in order. The other mitzvah that has to be in order is the avodah, the service of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. And that's source number six. Hilchot avodat Yom HaKippurim, mitzvat asei v'hi shi'aseh, Maase Yom HaKippurim Kulao Al HaSeder Kemo SheKatuv BeParshat Achrimot HaKorbanot HaViduyim Shiluach HaSa'ir Sha'ar Avodot. What's interesting is if the Kohen Gadol would do it precisely on Yom Kippur, precisely the way it's written in the Chumash, he would not fulfill his obligation, because we know that the Kohen Gadol would be switching throughout the day between the regular clothing or uniform, which had gold in it, the choshen and the ephod, and so on, and those that was worn for the regular daily activities, which took place on Yom Kippur as well, and the white uniform, big day bad, that was there just for the Yom Kippur activity. So each time there was a switch of clothing, there had to be a going to the mikveh, and there had to be washing the hands before and after the clothing change. According to the Chumash, this would necessitate three times going to the mikveh and before and after this clothing change, which means six times washing the hands and feet, kiddush yadayim v'raglayim. Yet there is a oral tradition that the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur had to do mikveh five times, not three times, and do 10 times washing of the hands. And the only way to facilitate that was to create a scenario where the Kohen Gadol is going to have to go into the Kodesh Kodashim one extra time. And it was done by having the Kohen Gadol leave some of the shovels from the Ktoret, from the sense offering, in the Kodesh Kodashim. He did not remove them, went out, changed clothing to take care of another part of the order of the day, and then changed again to go back into the Kodesh Kodashim to bring out these shovels. And what that did was it forced him to do the mikveh two more times and four more washing of the hands, which added up to a grand total of five times mikveh, tefillah, and 10 times washing the hands. And the Rav asked the question, my gosh, why did the Torah just say so? Why did the Torah give us a schedule that is wrong, essentially? And through the Torah Shavuot Peh, the channels of the oral law, we have to fix it up a little bit. The Rav said, that's the answer. That in Yom Kippur, Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to teach us that while on Shavuot we receive the Torah, the written law, on Yom Kippur we receive the oral law. It's the Yom Tov of Matan Torah, of the oral law. And hence the Kohen Gadol had to express this by doing it precisely according to the oral law. And indeed, there was a fight in the second Beit HaMikdash era between our Chachamim, who are the Prushim, the mainstream, and the sectarian group, the Tzedokim, who said, no, you do it like it says in the Chumash. And the Kohen Gadol had to, they administered an oath on Erev Yom Kippur to him that he better do it according to the tradition, exactly like the tradition. You know, hidden cameras they didn't have in those days in the Kodesh Kodeshim. So it was between him and a Kadosh Baruch Hu that he does it right. And they had to administer an oath to the Kohen Gadol that he would do it correctly according to the tradition of the oral law. And here the Rav said, Seder Avodat Yom HaKippurim. It had to be done in order. And if it was done out of order, he did nothing. So you have Tefillah Davening as in Shmon Esrei as an example. And you have the Avodah of Yom Kippur of the Kohen Gadol as an example, where the Seder is critical. And the third is the Seder of Seder night. It has to be done in order. And now, just to wrap up, what happened with this yachatz? So I'm leaving you in suspense. I don't want to leave you too much in suspense. So what happened with yachatz? Why do we do it before? And why did the Rambam have it after? So there are halacha considerations. Years ago, I gave a Shabbos Agudah drasha on this very, very idea. But I want to give you a little background. So some of you know that besides my love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and my wife, I have a third love. There's only a question in my family, you know, what the order is. It's called flying. See, Rivka knows my loves of flying, okay? So I was flying once back to Israel in November. on an LR flight, and one of the many times, because of my good fortunes and connections, I was upgraded when they had the Boeing 747 jumbo plane, let's just say ZAL, we don't fly them anymore. And remember, it had a bubble on top, and that was the business class section. To sit upstairs was a real yichus. So I got a seat upstairs, and who am I sitting next to? Rabbi Zvulun Chalap, who was the menahel, he was, now he's retired, he was the menahel of the yeshiva section of Yeshiva University, Rabbeinu Yitzchak Chanan Yeshiva, he was the menahel. And we knew each other for a long time, good rapport. A seasoned shul rabbi, young Israel of Mashula Parkway in the Bronx. And he's telling me, it was Parshas Vayishlach. I can't forget this. He's going to tell me the drasha that he has lined up for that Shabbos. Okay, I'm anxious to hear, because I'm also a shul rabbi. Maybe I'll get an idea from him, you know. So he tells me that you notice that Yaakov Avinu splits the family twice. The first time he splits the family is when he's approaching Esav. And in source number 9, it says, Vayira Yaakov me'od vayetzer lo. Yaakov Avinu is panicking out. Vayachatz et ha'am asher ito. He splits the family and his flock and everything. And why does he do this? Im yavo Esav ala machaneh achat pikau. If Esav is going to smite one part, at least we'll be able to run away. There'll be another group that's going to be able to flee. And we'll be able to rescue part of the family. That was one vayachas. Later in the story, when Yaakov already meets up with Esav, and he presents the families before Esav, it says, Vayisa Yaakov einav, Yaakov lifts his eyes, he sees, Vayar v'inei Esav ba, v'imo arba meot ish, he sees 400 people there, Vayachatz et hayaladim asher al le'ah val rachel v'shtei shvachot. He divides the family by the matriarchs. So first he has the Bilhah and Zilpah and their children, and then he has Leah and her children, and at the end he was going to have Rachel, and at that point there was only one son, it was Yosef. Binyamin was not born yet. But the Torah says, V'achar nigash Yosef v'Rachel. Yosef jumps in front of Rachel. And we'll see in a moment why. But this is another Vayachatz. And Rabbi Chalap was telling me, you know, there's got to be a difference between this vayachatz and that vayachatz. And he came up with some idea. I looked at him and I said, I have to give you a big yasher koyach because you just wrote my Shabbos HaGadol drasha. He says, why? Because here we're going to explain the machloket between the poskim who said to do the yachatz before the halach ma'anya and the yachatz of the Rambam, which is after the Haggadah, before you eat the moitzi matzah. The difference is the first vayachatz of Yaakov Avinu was vayachatz of galut. Of galut, of exile, of being afraid, of stooping low, of having an exit strategy because we're going to get hit. There was no win-win situation there. It was a lose-lose situation. Before you say halach ma'anya, di achala abatana be'arada mitzrayim, this is the poor man's bread that we ate in Egypt. Which means this yachatz is the vayachatz of the beginning of Parshat Vayishlach, where Am Yisrael, unfortunately, is suffering from an exilic mentality, and that has to be understood. And that we say at the beginning of the Haggadah, unabashedly, matchil b'gnut. But then there's a second vayachatz, and that's after Gaal Yisrael. My gosh, when you finish Magad, we should be in an uplifting spirit. And that's why we jumped the gun with Halil. You know, Halil is the first chapter, Kuf Yud Gimel, Halu Hashem Hashem, Halu Avdei Ad Hashem. So we should be saying it after benching. What do? We say the first two prakim of Halil before the stringing of the second cup, and then we finish up Halil after benching, after Birkat HaMazon. What's happening is we are in such uplifting experience. The fika hanachnu chayavim leodot la'alel l'shabach. Wow, we've gotten out of Egypt. Asher galanu v'galat avoteinu boru pri hagafen. That's a different yachatz. That's the yachatz of geula. That's the matzah of geula. There's matzah of galut and there's matzah of geula, and hence there are two different positions of yachatz. Whether you have it at the beginning of the Haggadah, where you're focusing on the matzah of exile, of galut, or you're focusing on matzah of geulah, of redemption. It's a completely different position in the Haggadah. And to that end, there's no doubt that Elu ve'elu Dvarei Elokim Chayim, you know, both are obviously Torah, and everybody will do according to the minhag, and the minhag is to do the yachatz before the magid, no doubt, but at least to give some type of verbal expression to the yachatz in accordance with the Rambam, which is also has meaning. And I just want to conclude with a poem that most of us don't say here in Eretz Yisrael, because the Vilna Gaon basically had objections to poetry that was incorporated into the Chazarat Hashatz, which are called Yotzrot. I grew up in a shul in America where they included Yotzrot on Parshat Shkalim and Parshat Zachor, Parshat HaChodesh, on Chagim. When the Chazar said Chazarat Hashatz, there were all kinds of add-ons to the davenings. The Vilna Gaon was against it. He said it was a hefsek and so on. In the Shabbat HaGadol, there is a very long-winded poem written by the same Rav Yosef Tov Elim I mentioned at the beginning of the shir. It's called Elokei HaRuchot L'chol Basar. And basically, it's a poetic rendition of all of the halachot of Pesach. In case you wanted to just get all the dinim of Pesach in one long poem, it's been done already. And it's pages and pages and pages. And when he ends it, I'm turning the pages in the siddur, it's 5-6 pages of a poem. At the end, it says, Chasal sidur Pesach kehilchato, kechol mishpato v'chukoto, kasher zachinu l'sader oto, ke nizkeh la'asoto. We are familiar with this tail end of this poem as part of the Haggadah. We call it Nirtza. Well, basically, the way it's explained in Seder night is, We just finished the Seder, and we did it in accordance with all of the halachot, kechol mishpato v'chukoto. Kasher zachinu l'sader oto, just as we made our Seder tonight, keinizke la'asoto, we should have a schut of doing it, you know, with Beit Mikdash and everything. That's not what Rabbi Yosef Tov Elim had in mind. What Rabbi Yosef Tov Elim had in mind was, this poem was said on Shabbat before Pesach, Shabbat HaGadol. And he's saying, Chasal Sidur Pesach. It's part of the Siddur. I've just read, I've studied, I've recalled all the dinim of Pesach, all of it. Kechol mishpato v'chukoto. Kasher zachinu l'sader oto, just as I had a schut now of saying it in order, as part of the Siddur, we'll get to say the night and we'll perform it. So he was not talking about Beit HaMikdash. At the end, he has a tefillah. Zach shochein me'ona. Zach is the pure one. Reference HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who resides above. Komeim kahal adat mimana. Mimana was said by Bilam, who can count Am Yisrael. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu should raise up the nation who Bilam said mimana. Bikarov nahel nit echana, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu should take, you know, the ones who are the fruits, which we are. It's a reference to Am Yisrael. Peduyim l'tzion berina, we should be redeemed with great joy. This for sure is messianic. It's a hope at the end, but that's not what the Chasal Seder Pesach was. The Rambam's idea was that you think you're sitting down to Seder night in Egypt in the 12th century, in New York in the 20th or 21st century, or even in Yerushalayim in the 21st century. You think you're sitting down to a wonderful Seder? Wow, all your problems are Corona. How many people can come to the table? No, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the Seder. Wow, beautiful Seder. Gorgeous. I have a lot of food, thank God. Matzah Shmuruv, 15 Ashkachas. I've got the best Seder in the books. Says the Rambam, your Seder is Lo B'Seder. You know why it's Lo B'Seder? Because you don't have the Gufo Shel Pesach, and you don't have the Chagiga, and you don't have the Valayla Zet Kula Tzli, and you don't have Pesach She'anu Ochlim. You don't have that. And when you don't have that, Rabotai, your Seder is Lo B'Seder. And the Rambam is telling us that in spite of the fact that we're doing the best of our ability, it's not good enough. And until we get Beit HaMikdash up and running, it is not going to be B'Seder. And this is a message that the Rambam feels. When you study the laws of the Haggadah, you do it as if the Beit HaMikdash is up and running. this is the Seder that has to be Beseder. And if it's anything but that, it's Lo Beseder. Ubazman hazeh, ubazman hazeh, ubazman hazeh. And today, and today, and today, we're missing this, we're changing that. It's not a substitute that's viable. It's just to get through. We have to get through. So we have the ubazman hazeh. But we should remember that this is not the full Seder. And hence, we say, Chazal say the Pesach kilchato, we have to say it with a grain of salt. It is not kichol mishpato v'chukoto. Rabbi Yosef Tov Elam in this beautiful poem did not talk about the Korban Pesach because he was writing in France in the 11th century. And in the 11th century in France, there was no Korban Pesach. It wasn't on their agenda. It wasn't there. And hence, but the Rambam felt that we should at least condition ourselves to recognizing, yes, it's Yom Tov. Yes, it's a Simcha of Yom Tov. Yes, there are mitzvot that we are performing, Doraita, Matzah, Sipur Yetziyah Mitzrayim, Arba Kosot Midrabanan, Morim Midrabanan, a lot of things that we're doing, and we're doing it correctly. We're doing it according to all the Shiurim, and everything is fine. But just remember, it's Lo Beseder. It's not 100% Beseder. So let's not get carried away. Until we have the entire Seder properly, the way he presents it, without the Bezman Azez, it's not going to be 100% Beseder. So this may sound a little bit pessimistic, but we're making progress. Because we used to sing L'Shana Ba B'Yerushalayim, but after 1967, people added L'Shana Ba B'Yerushalayim HaBnuya, recognizing that how can you sing L'Shana Ba B'Yerushalayim if you're living in downtown Yerushalayim? How can you sing that? So we have to add L'Shana Ba B'Yerushalayim HaBnuya. There's another station yet. We're not there yet. We're not 100% there yet. We've made tremendous, tremendous historic progress. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the schut of being here in Eretz Yisrael, being here in Yerushalayim, and the great hope is that one day we'll be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Leil HaSeder, literally, kilchato b'chol chukotav mishpatav, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu should understand, kasher zachinu, as we have a schut of doing the best of our ability, he should give us the schut of going further and being able to fulfill it entirely, completely. And to that end, I wish each and every one of you a Chag Kosher v'Sameach and a healthy Chag Kosher v'Sameach. A healthy. We have to add Chag Kosher v'Sameach v'Bari. I always tell people, kasher it's going to be. I'm not worried about it. You see how many Ashkochot I got out there. It's going to be kasher. But it should be Bari. I should be Sameach.